Comics. It is episode 31, and boy, oh boy, do we have a fun topic for tonight. This one, I think, kind of fell into our lap, and yeah, it really did. One night, I'll give you the backstory here. One night.
I feel like we need some transition music going.
Right. It was a dark and stormy night. And my lovely co-host, Miss Carrie Honey.
I think it was a crappy Wednesday, actually.
Like, I think it was, too. But
like, during the workday.
You're killing my sense of drama.
Sorry.
Here. And Carrie texts me and says, oh, my God, Batman and Catwoman are getting married. And I think she expected I was going to be like, oh. But instead, I was like, oh, my God. And I rushed out, and I bought the issue, and I'm so excited, you guys. So we're going to talk about Batcat. And then Carrie had the joy of learning that apparently Deathstroke is dissolving into an issue of Maury Povich.
This would be the best Maury Povich episode ever.
Ever. Literally ever. You want to explain what's going on in Deathstroke?
Well, apparently in Deathstroke, Batman got a hold of some paperwork that claims that Damian is Slade Wilson's son.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce isn't taking that very well.
It's funny to me because over...
The whole issue is funny to me.
Well, like, on one hand, you have over here, you're like, oh, Bruce and Selina are finally getting married. And it's so wonderful. But then, like, in a whole other series, it's like, yeah, his whole world's about to come fucking crashing down on him. Because is he the son, the father of Damian? Who knows?
The cover here. I'll show Jen the cover. You guys can't see it, but the cover, it says, ooh, "Deathstroke versus Batman: The Lie That Changes Everything."
I would actually kind of, I hope they go through with it. So we'll talk paternity first. I genuinely hope they go through with this, and it's not just one of those, anyways, it was all bullshit. Batman's totally his father. Let's move on with our lives. I really hope they go through with this, and they're like, actually, yeah. Even if it's not Deathstroke, just that when they're like, it's totally not Bruce, though, I would find that so wonderful.
Yeah.
Because I think because I dislike Damian as a character so much, I would love for it to just be like, oh yeah, by the way, that ain't your dad either. Like, I mean, they keep shitting on this poor kid who is a terrible character. I just, oh man, I genuinely hope that they go through with this and they don't just pull a fast one on the end and be like, haha, just kidding.
Yeah, maybe Damian should have stayed dead.
Right.
There's that. But we'll get into this because there was some, I was just looking through it and there was some stuff that happened in the very beginning that I never told you. So we'll to get to that. But first, I guess we got to get to Batcat. And so yes, when I did text you about that, so you get to some of my backstory with that. It was a crappy Wednesday. It was a work day. I'm talking, or a Thursday. I don't remember. I'm there chatting in the chat with Larry and Seth, and Jen is like drowning in spreadsheets or something.
Oh, Jesus, I haven't spreadsheet hell at work.
So, we were just chatting, and I don't remember even how this even came up, but I think I was... Larry brought up that they were getting married.
And I was so, like, it was on Saturday, by the way, and the exact text is, Jesus fucking Christ, Bruce Wayne is marrying Selina Kyle. And I responded with, oh my god, I'm not going to buy that. And you said, you're the worst.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So maybe it was on a Saturday.
It was on a Saturday.
Because I'm, okay, so now I'm going to have to, like, go back through this. But I think that Seth posted, it always starts with Seth. And his links.
Seth is the instigator.
And his links to CBR.
It's true. He just shows up and he's like, here's a little shit bomb. And then he leaves.
So, but, I can't, I'm going to get to a minute, but Larry ends up talking about, that they're getting married. Oh, here it is. So, Seth dropped in to chat, a link to CBR, see, I was right, that says Jeff Johns and Jamie Rich to explore DC Rebirth's Three Jokers mystery.
Oh my god, that whole sentence. Okay. But anyways.
So then Larry writes about time, and so then I have to be snarky because I think the whole Three Jokers thing is stupid. And I said, so different artists and writers won't cut it for an explanation? And Seth just said, well, Johns has to do it just because, well, it's Johns. And so then Larry said, well, you know, Catwoman is getting her own series again. That's what married life will do for you. And I was like, wait, what now? I was like, she's married to who? And he's like, married to Bruce Wayne. And I just did my ... And Larry said, or we'll be next issue. And then Seth said, I put Batman on the back burner when that storyline started. So then I have to be really snarky. I was like, because he needs another slightly evil son. And Larry said, can you imagine a pregnant Catwoman storyline? To which I wrote, would that mean she was in heat? And Larry didn't like that. But Seth thought that was funny. So, and that was pretty much how it ended. So, I text Jen the whole thing. So, I totally expected her to be like, oh my god, what is DC smoking now? Totally did not get that reaction. And instead, Sunday night, she puts into chat, in all caps, I am going to read the shit out of Married Selina and Bruce. And then, until they get to the inevitable divorce, 5 issues in which I will rage and quit.
Well, it's true, and that is my genuine concern, is that this is just going to be, again, with DC, they do this kind of shit all the time, right? Where they're like, ooh, here's something that'll interest you, and then they get like 2 or 3 issues in, and they're like, psych! Anyways, keep staying around to read the rest of this shit. No, I am a little disappointed that we have to wait until July, apparently, for the new Catwoman series. But, so the issue itself, oh my god, it was phenomenal. It was like mainlining romance novels through DC. It was so good. So, the thing that I loved about it, it was very fun. They bounced between 2 stories. One is kind of Batman and Catwoman, kind of their meet cute, but then kind of the evolution of their relationship. And then, Catwoman, present day Catwoman, breaking into a bridal dress gown boutique and stealing a $28,000 dress. It's every bit as delightful as you can imagine.
Even though Bruce could afford that.
Well, exactly. Which I think is the part that makes it the best. And there's no way, because you know that it's going to be a big deal, right?
Right.
It's going to be a huge deal, his wedding. There's no way that store's not like, that's our $28,000 dress that went missing. And, it's so fantastic. But the thing that I love is that they go through, so it's all the history of their outfits. So Catwoman's had a bunch of them, and they brought back my favorite one from, like, the late 80s, early 90s, when she wore the long purple dress type thing. It's so ridiculous, and yet I loved it. But my interpretation of it was that it's all these, you know, them fighting and chasing each other and helping one another, and the dialogue between them, I got the impression that it wasn't what was actually said, but they were just showing us the subtext of what was going on. Because the dialogue doesn't always fit with what they're doing, right? They're chasing each other along a rooftop, but then they're sitting there talking about how I think we're really kind of moving towards a relationship here. So, like, they were just kind of pointing out, like, this has been such a long time in the making. And there's actually, other than those flashbacks, there's very little Bruce in this. There's some Batman in the flashbacks, but she gets out of bed from Bruce to go steal her dress and gets back in bed with him with her $28,000 dress. Like, it's just so fantastic because it's so her. Just so her. And I, oh man, I got to the end of that issue and was like, oh, can we please have more of this? It was written by Tom King, I think.
Yes, yes. I like Tom King. I know I've talked about him before. He was one of the writers for Grayson.
Yes. And I really, it was so phenomenal. And yeah, I'll have to send you a picture of this dress she picks out. It's fucking Catwoman. It has like this really long white skirt, but then all this black lace on it.
Mm.
It's so beautiful. And it's just so perfect. And there's just enough, I don't know, there's a little bit of wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of stuff all throughout it. I'm so excited, but I am just terrified that it's going to be one of those things where they're like, and we're never going to talk about this again, or we can't get married. You don't love me. This will never work. And then we just move on with our lives. They can't do it to me, Carrie. I'm emotionally invested.
Well, I mean, their relationship has been kind of more serious since Rebirth started, and I didn't really catch on because I don't fucking read Batman, but just because of lately Catwoman has been in Batgirl and the Birds of Prey a lot,
right?
And not as a thief, like she's helping out. And mm-hmm. when there was that arc where these women were out to basically kill all men, you know, mm-hmm. when it dawned on Catwoman, because she helped steal this, but she didn't realize what it was for, because, you know, what does she care? She just wants to get paid. And she stole something right. else while she was there, because she stole this formula, and her the buyer was Poison Ivy.
Oh, right.
So she steals it, but while she's in the safe stealing this, you know, formula, she's like, well, look, there's diamonds right here. I'm just going
to. It would be a pity if something happened to them.
They're just right here, so I might as well just take these too. And
it's kind of hard to argue with that logic.
You're already there.
I mean, no, you're there. Come on.
You've already cracked open the safe. You know, might as well just take everything else that's in there.
Expectation of them not being stolen.
Right. I mean, if they didn't want them stolen, why'd they put them with this formula? Come on.
Fucking seriously. Who does that?
Really, though, who does that?
Batman people who live in Gotham are like, sherp, one-stop shopping for the bad guys.
I never thought about how dumb that is until now.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, earlier this week on Facebook, one of my coworkers, she put on there that one of her, she's a teacher, one of her students said, because they were talking about Cinderella, and one of her students said, if her shoe could only fit her foot, why did it fall off in the first place? And I'm like, well, dang, I feel dumb all the way back to when I was six. Like, what did I ever think of that? And that's kind of how I'm feeling now with this. But
that's funny.
But when they figure out what is going on, the first thing Catwoman does is go to Bruce's mansion
mm-hmm.
and help him get back into bed because he's collapsed.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the first thing Bruce asks is, can you please go check on Alfred?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes and helps Alfred, and she comes back and, you know, kind of helps, you know, Bruce, like, get in bed. She's like, we're going to fix this type thing and blah, blah, blah. So it was right then I realized, okay, maybe there's something a little bit more to this, because normally she may not care so much. She'd be like, oh, well, that kind of sucks. Like, and like, maybe she wouldn't have put the dots together that Bruce, because, you know. So right then I kind of had an idea, but at the same time, you know, every time Barbara has asked Bruce, like, hey, I need Catwoman, can you get me her number? And he's like, you know, I don't know what you think of Selina and me, but it's not like that. And she goes, she's like, seriously, just give me her damn number. So I never really knew exactly what to think about that. But apparently, it has gotten serious. And, you know, if this wedding does go through, I actually see this event being as big as Scott and Jean's wedding back in the 90s.
Right.
Because that was another one that was, what, 60 years? No, 30 years in the coming, in the making for that one.
There was that one. So let's see. I'm trying to think of the last, like, big wedding event we had. So, like, I do remember, I just totally blanked. So there's Scott and Jean's wedding, Spider-Man and Mary Jane.
Okay.
I remember their wedding. Yeah. Her dress was holy fuck.
Is that a good one or a bad one?
Oh, so terrible.
Oh.
And when was that? It was so.
That had to have been the 90s. 80s
or 90s. Fun fact about Jen, in my previous life, I worked in bridal. So I'm not a fashion person at all, but I have, like, really strong opinions about certain styles of wedding dresses because I sold them for so long. But the mermaid dress, fucking don't. If you ever think to yourself, ooh, I think a mermaid would be really nice on me, it isn't. But Mary Jane has on this massive mermaid dress.
I think
where the tail is huge.
I think Jean had a mermaid dress.
I think she did, because they were really popular in the 80s and 90s, and they kind of tried to bring them back in the late 90s, and just don't. Everybody realized that was a really bad idea.
I'll have to pull up, you know, pictures of Jean's dress, but I don't remember it being like the traditional mermaid, where it's just like this slinky top and like this, you know, ocean waves at the bottom type thing. It was more, I don't know.
Well, the mermaid dress is the one where it's a sheath, a tight sheath, all the way down to, like, your shins, and then it fans out, and it just...
Right, so it's kind of like either a tail...
Stop buying these.
Or, like, ocean, like waves, the way I saw it. It's like,
yes, she did have on a mermaid dress back in the... God, I think it was in the 90s as well. But, I mean, it's been a really long time since we've had a... Well, I guess... I don't want to say a big wedding, but, like, a wedding that I cared about.
Well, I don't know when Superman and Lois Lane got married the first time.
They got married a couple times.
Right.
But I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember when. And then when did Wally and Linda get married?
Oh, well, that... I have no idea.
Or not Linda. Iris. When did they get married?
Oh, so you mean Barry and Iris. Gosh,
yes.
That would have had to have been in the 70s or 80s. Maybe the 80s.
I would have sworn that Wally and Linda did too, though.
Wally and Linda did get married.
Okay.
And that one might have been big. I don't know, but that was before I kind of got into that. So that was, you know, pre-New 52.
And then, I'm trying to think. When did Batman and Talia get married?
Did they get married?
Mm-hmm.
Or did they just live in sin?
No, I'm pretty... Shit, it was in the mid-80s, and I'm pretty sure they did, because it's in that story arc... Something of the Demon. Son of the Demon, maybe? Son of the... Hey, gosh darn it, now I'm gonna look this up.
I see, I am too.
It was in 87. It was in Son of the Demon. It is deemed to be non-canon.
Oh.
But they do get married.
But that can't be when he had Damian, or could it?
I think she gets pregnant while they're married.
All right, let me...
So,
okay, I'm gonna look up Damian Wayne and try to not write Damian Wayan.
Wayan!
Wayan Brothers. God damn, I almost did type it.
When did Canary and Arrow, and Green Arrow get married?
Did they marry?
Yeah.
Well, they ain't married now.
Yeah, because I remember the, outfit that they had her in on the cover. They basically took her regular outfit and made it white. And, God, when was that? I'm trying to think. Maybe it hasn't. Yeah, I don't know. It was in the early aughts. But it's been a really long time.
Okay, so Damian Wayne did not appear until 2006. So he's actually fairly recent.
Huh. Okay, then. And I'm trying to think who else. Like, I know that the Hulk and Betty got married once. I don't really care about that. Of course, Reed and Sue were married.
Yes, but yeah. Well, they got married in the 60s. And I know, yeah. And I know that because I have like a collection of the original X-Men comics. No, it's nothing special. It's like an essential book that you can get anywhere, like on Amazon.
Right.
I don't think people think I have like all these 60s. No, I don't. And in it is, and question. So it's in the somewhere in like the first like maybe 12 or 15 issues, Professor X like kidnaps the Human Torch. Sort of,
mm-hmm.
like basically takes his mind, and be like, "We need you. You got to do this." And he's like, "Yes, sir." But and after he releases him, he's like, "What have I been doing? Wow, Reed told me I needed to pay attention because people might want to sabotage their wedding." So I know it was I know it was in the 60s.
That sounds about right.
Okay,
Superman and Lois got married. I remember they got married in the mid 90s because it was right after. You remember they killed him in 93 or 94 they killed him, and then they brought him back that same year, and then I think like a year or two later they got married.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to think. Mary Jane and Spider-Man, I actually want to say that was late 80s. I do know for a fact, now that I'm thinking about it, or I say this for a fact, but I'm like 90% certain that Scott and Jean get married around 94, because I was in high school when they got married.
Yes, it was the 90s, yes.
Yeah, so I want to say it was 94, because I remember I was in Hawaii at the time, so it had to have been around then.
Could have. I have no idea.
And then, I'm trying to think. And that's really, like, the only weddings that I ever remember being like, oh, wow. So this is going to sound really stupid, but I'm really, really excited for this wedding, because I've always wanted them to get together. They've always been my favorite couple, or one of, I should say.
Well, hold that thought for 1 second, because as I'm doing my research on Damian Wayne.
Oh no.
So okay, so you said that Batman and Talia, so they got married in the 80s.
Yes.
According to this 1987 story of Batman, Son of the Demon, and it said he was there. He was an unnamed infant, which at the time was not considered canon. You're gonna love
yes.
And you're gonna love this. Following this, various alternate universe stories. See, that's the problem with comics right there. Those four words dealt with the character's life, giving him various names. In 2006, the character was reinterpreted as Damian Wayne and introduced into the main continuity of Batman in issue 655. So there you go. Okay, so the idea Damien has been around for a fucking long time. Okay, yeah. So he married Talia in non-canon story, but then they decided to make it canon. I guess kind of like Barbara getting shot.
Oh, yeah. But they decided to actually honor it.
Right, because they consider that the Killing Joke non-canon, yet...
since the Joker gets killed, yeah.
Well, yes. Well, and it's really funny because you read interviews with that and they're like, you know, can you interpret the last panel? And he's like, I absolutely will. And then, like, walks off. So, I mean, you can interpret it however you want, I think, is basically what he's saying. Doesn't matter.
I think so.
It's non-canon. Well,
it's like the, if you've ever watched Pulp Fiction, mm-hmm. I think maybe a few years ago he decided to confirm this, but for the longest time when people asked what was in the briefcase, he was like, what do you think's in the briefcase? That was always his answer. He would never answer what was in the briefcase. Because the reigning theory is that it's Marcellus Wallace's soul, but he has never confirmed it, or at least he hadn't up until, he may have several years ago, but it was kind of like, what's his face, Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott never, until like, I think, maybe 10 years ago, he finally confirmed that, yeah, freaking Harrison Ford is a replicant at the end of Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
But that's funny to me. Well, that's so him.
Well, and I also have to say, like, with the whole Pulp Fiction thing, I have never heard what's been confirmed to be because I never cared. It was a device, and I think it was supposed, you know,
it was a MacGuffin.
It was a plot device. It was there. It made you curious, like, what was so important, or what was so valuable, but it didn't bother me that you didn't know, because at the same time, my theory was that if you did know, it wouldn't be as special, right? Or as amazing. So.
Well, it's a MacGuffin, and there's a joy to there being that mystery, right? Like, ooh, what's in it? What's in it? I don't know. It was kind of, so on a Game of Thrones thing, one of my favorite things for the longest time, and I knew this was going to end, but as a very long time fan of the Song of Ice and Fire, I mean, I spent like 10 years, every time you would find somebody else who read the Song of Ice and Fire, one of the first questions you would ask would be like, who do you think Jon Snow's parents are? Right? And it would be really fun to have that conversation. And I was actually a little disappointed. I was pleased on one hand when the Game of Thrones show confirmed that, you know, mm-hmm. we were all correct. But on the other hand, I was kind of like, oh man, I can't debate it anymore. And it was always so kind of fun for the fans who are watching the show. She's like, well, you didn't read the books, so you totally don't know who his parents are. Even though it's really obvious if you read the fucking books. But like, yeah, so I don't like when the mystery is taken away. Because, you know, it makes you all excited sometimes. Anyways, that aside, weddings! I'm so excited.
Yeah, speaking of a mystery, like, will this wedding happen?
You know, I'm trying to think of a DC wedding where they don't immediately retcon it or reboot it or make it null and void. Because even, again, I know that it's not canon, but Talia, I think if I remember that arc correctly, they get married and at the end of the arc, they are no longer married. So, like, I want to say it was 4 or 5 issues, that Son of the Demon. And they're married and then they're not. Like, what the heck, guys? So I'm worried that they're going to do the same thing to me and then I'm just going to be all sad.
Or they're going to do what happened at Dick Grayson and Corey's wedding. Which is not the same thing, but what happened at their wedding was Raven showed up possessed by a demon and killed the priest.
Oh! Right, because they made, oh shoot, I had read some article about it, and they were like, Raven objects. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting way to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, nothing dampers a wedding than a demon-possessed woman killing a priest.
Really, you know, it just sucks the mood right out.
Right, and apparently Dick wanted to continue to get married, and Corey was one who was like, I think you're rushing this. So she's the one who kind of backed it off. But
right.
What if that happens? Like, what if Poison Ivy comes in? And has fucked with Catwoman's bouquet, you know?
I actually kind of am assuming that's going to happen. I was telling, so that one of my favorite comic issues that I read when I was a kid was Bruce and Selina decide that they're going to have a date night as Batman and Catwoman. They're going to have a date night. And they go out and they, of course, it's, you know, the series of unfortunate events where they catch some guy trying to, like, rob a bank and they stop him. And then they catch somebody, like, trying to mug someone and they stop him. And so their whole night, they keep trying to go out and they keep getting stopped by, like, criminals and having to fight together and work together. And but it, like, it ends up being this kind of, like, cutesy, like, this is not how we planned our night to turn out thing. And I always really liked it because I thought it was really cute. I talk a big game, but secretly, I have such a little soft, squishy center. And I was I have a strong suspicion that it's going to be, here's the wedding! Oh, no! Talia's here to object! There's Poison Ivy's making my bouquet kill everyone, and yeah.
Or shit, you know, maybe Slade will show up.
I object that my son is in the wedding party. So, alright, so speaking of things that I'm like, there's just no way. We gotta talk paternity.
First of all, I love the fact that you coined paternity when I first brought this up. That was just amazing. So, Deathstroke, I know where to begin. So, Deathstroke, the latest issue starts off with, of all things, apparently Alfred and Wintergreen meet at a pub every now and then.
Can I just say that is still easily my most hated superhero name?
Wintergreen?
It's a fucking gum. It's a flavor. It's not a name.
It's actually a plant, but...
It's a flavor of gum. Why are you calling yourself that? Good God, name yourself root beer.
That's his last name.
I don't care. No, you find something different.
You gotta remember that this is the same comic publisher that came up with the Penguin. All right.
See, that works though, but that's not his last name. And he
was okay. Let's go to his name. His name is Oswald Cobblepot because that's so much better.
Well, yes, he realized that that's not a great name. So then he goes off and he wears tuxedos a lot and he calls himself the Penguin. It's better than a fucking gum flavor. I don't know why. For some reason, I hear Wintergreen and I'm like, oh, for God's sake.
I actually used the Wintergreen essential oil earlier today. But anyway.
Oh, I bet you smell lovely.
I do. I smelled like bubblegum. So apparently the two of them go to a pub every now and then and talk about their masters, which I found hilarious.
And one does, right?
And they talk about
Butler notes.
Yeah, that, you know, that they feel like it's their thing to take care of them. Which I just never thought about these two guys being like, so we got to talk about Bats and Slade. can we ever get these crazy kids to get along? I don't know. It's just such a random thing. But then it goes into Batman at a scene of a crime. Gordon called him and he's like, hey, you know, this is what they seem to be looking for. Oh, and by the way, there's a letter here with your name on it, but it's addressed to me. Mm-hmm. So I think this is for you. So, you know, so Batman, he takes it back and he looks at it and it's a DNA test is what it is. It's a DNA test that proves that Deathstroke is Damian's father.
Mm-hmm.
And so Alfred even asks him, he's like, it's an obvious forgery because you had your own test done and you were a positive match. And Bruce even says, he's like, no, this is a language. Someone is speaking to me. I need to decipher the message. So then when he figures out that it is Deathstroke, he actually figures out where Deathstroke's next hit is going to be because he doesn't realize that Deathstroke's actually not killing anybody anymore. It's a very long, convoluted story of what he's doing.
But wait a minute. Was this like a cry for help? Like, you have to stop him. So he's Damian's dad.
I don't know. Oh, so Batman, like, he, like, totally disrupts this hit. Like, he's, like, gone crazy. He actually drops down an elevator, chokes this guy, calls him Slade, and it's not even him.
Oh, my God.
Because Slade's actually outside. But then, anyway, the two of them meet up, and Batman, like, wraps chains around Deathstroke's neck, hangs him from a side of a building, and is like, okay, we need to talk about this paternity test. And he's like, why?
Yeah.
And,
you owe back child support, that's why.
Right. And, he keeps talking about it. Batman being Batman, he goes about, you know, saying that it's about something else. And finally, Slade's like, what are you even talking about? And he's like, why do you care about who this guy is? Like, are you guys cousins or something? I don't understand why you care about who this hit is, because this is a very bad person. He's like, well, it's because of this, and shows up DNA tests. And he's like, this proves that you're the father of Talia al Ghul's son. And he's just like, so? And Batman's staring at him, and so then Deathstroke goes, oh, please, stop it. I have money. I sleep around. Do you have any idea how many of these I get a year?
It's like, okay, That is somehow, like, the best thing I've heard all week. Like, I can just imagine, like, Deathstroke just being like, oh my god, you have no idea how many kids I have.
It's like, Talia was a... Well, he's basically saying that people try to get him up for money all the time. Talia was a very long time ago. I'm not the father of her child. And so Batman says, so you've seen these results before? He goes, yes, I have. They're fake. You know this. Yeah, you can prove it. He's like, I don't have to. like, I don't have to. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm not taking this bait. This is dumb. And I'd advise you to do the same thing. And, you know, Batman's like, I'm going to kill you. And he goes, yeah, you don't have the stones to do it. Just stop talking. And it's so funny because Batman is so angry.
He's not wrong.
Who, Deathstroke? No, he's...
Yeah, it's not like he's going to kill him.
I mean, so, I mean, the two of them, they walk away from each other. But he's like, I'm going to find out the truth. And Slade's like, yeah, you do that. I don't really...
That just sounds so much like him. And he would just be like, eh, I got better shit to do right now.
Of course, the best thing is, like, you know, Batman, he's all threatening him. And Slade finally says, you know what? I know things about you. When you move, where you sit... I know where you move to who you sit with. You fight crime because I allow it. Robin breathes because I allow it. Don't confuse me with some lunatic who dresses like a penguin. He's like,
this is all wonderful.
Yeah, Deathstroke, he ends it with, let it go. Ignorance is bliss. This is like, you know, I peace out. I got things to do. You can call me later. And
so funny.
I mean, and that's just, this is part one of the Batman versus Deathstroke.
So it's like, so funny.
But at the same time, I'm like, okay, Batman, if you're really this upset about it, just go get another test done.
Right.
It's not like you don't know where Damian is.
I feel like that story, on one hand, when you told me about it, I was like, oh my god, that's funny. But on the other hand, I was kind of also like, oh, they're really running out of ideas. They need to kill some... they need to kill some issues, right? Like, I feel like this is just going to be his chase down for it, and ultimately you're going to be right back where you started, and they're going to find out that, nope, you're totally his dad, and, anyways, now we know where we want to go with the next few arcs. Like, I feel like this is just them kind of... Yeah. Killing some time.
Well, this whole issue was right out of left field, like everything that Deathstroke is, because I tell you what, this series... They get to what they think is the end of the story, and they, instead of finishing it, they jump to the next, and you're like, what the shit? And you have to wait till they're done with that next one so they can wrap up what really happened at the end of that last one.
Oh my gosh.
And the thing is, like, and I would hate it if Priest was not such an amazing writer, but he's really good at it, so I have to let it go. So, like, the end of last issue of Deathstroke was Deathstroke in Arkham Asylum. Yeah.
That's funny, though.
Like, he has one of those dampeners, you know, around... He's in a straight jacket. He has a dampener around his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And he... I don't know if it's true or he just believes that he does, but he believes that he has this implant, the spinal implant on him that he thinks that Isherwood put on him that has Wintergreen, like a younger version of Wintergreen, constantly talking to him, like a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
But then the stuff that he tells him to do is crazier and crazier and crazier. Like, he's like, no, you don't need to do this. You need to kill people again. Like your son, like, do you really need him? I mean, he's kind of worthless. And he's like, wait, Wintergreen, what are you saying? And they're like, so everyone stops fighting. They're just kind of looking at him like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, you know what? You put this implant in my back. And Isherwood said, I was gaslighting you. You don't have anything. He's like, no, you guys are trying to make me think that I'm crazy. It's all this huge plot that Adeline and Tara have, and which they did have one. Right. And he's like, you know, this is all what this is. And they're like, dude, no. Like, that's not it. And Chinese Superman, Adeline had called Chinese Superman here, reported a false terrorism threat. And so Chinese Superman was trying to take him away. But ended mm-hmm. up deciding, you know what, I'm just going to dump you in Arkham because you're saying that there's somebody in your head and there's not. So let's just hang out here.
Oh my goodness.
And that's how that issue ended, was with him in a padded cell, in a straitjacket with a dampener, and young Wintergreen sitting in front of him going, well, what are we going to do next? And Slade basically tells him, you can shut up. And that was how it ended. It was like, well, this is... How's this going to go? Well, so now we have this. I'm like, okay, this is so Christopher Priest. Because, you know, we just figured out who killed Etienne, and it just kind of like, yep, that's what happened. We're moving on. Like, really, dude?
And you said that was really random, too.
It feels that way. And then Joey was just kind of, he just kind of accepted it. He's like, well, I'm not going to kill my sister, you know, especially since it turns out, okay, I'm going to say this, she was possessed by a former Hmong princess. That kind of made her do so much of crazy things, which explains, like, her memory lapses, and she passes out, and, you know.
That's totally going to be my excuse.
Right?
Someday I'm just going to be like, oh, that wasn't me. That was the dead princess that has possessed me.
You're right.
Actually, with you, you'd probably be like, well, that seems legit.
Yeah, the only way I would know if you were lying is if you said it was the Sun Queen. I'd be like, uh-huh. Sure it
and
is, sweetie.
Like, yeah, no, that's not how that works.
No.
I couldn't even bring myself to say that. Oof, even if it was true. Like, well, shit.
You keep that shit to yourself.
That's right. Like, we are never going to talk about this at all.
So, the next Deathstroke, I think, this one is every other week. I don't remember, but, I mean, it's going to be interesting how it coincides with the Batcat wedding.
Yes.
Anything happens, or if this interferes with the wedding, that'd be even more hysterical. Of course, like I was joking earlier, how that this would make an amazing Maury Povich show.
Oh yeah, this would be hilarious.
But the question is, like, do you have Slade Wilson and Bruce Wayne, or do you have Batman and Deathstroke? Either one is kind of funny, to be honest.
Actually, that'd be hilarious if you just had all the superheroes up there.
Because then we talked about this earlier today, because then you got to bring in Nightwing, because who knows, you know?
Who knows? Oh, who knows? And then you would have to bring in someone, like, I mean, to give a nod to the cinematic universe, you'd have to bring in Bane. you'd have to bring in, let's see, who
and
else?
Make sure the Bane that you can't understand, not the Mexican wrestler.
Right, right. And who else would you... I mean, there's, like... You'd have to bring in, like, two other just random freaking people, and then you'd have to have Roz there, like, watching the whole thing.
With his arms crossed.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, which one of you motherfuckers have I been wasting time on?
Oh, I know who it should be. Another person. Vandal Savage.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Oh, my goodness. And maybe... I still think the funniest reveal would be Nightwing, only because of how much... how much Damian struggles with his feelings for or arguably the only real brother figure he has.
Well, yeah, he constantly calls Dick his brother.
Yeah, so I mean, like, but there's so much under the surface of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be hilarious. Like, oh, by the way, that's your dad.
See, what I think would be hilarious as if, you know, Maury standards, they come out with the different tests. And they're like, Batman, you're not the father. And he's just like sitting back like, oh, okay. And he goes, Slade, you are not the father. And then the two of them high five.
He's like, yes, I knew that kid was a shit. And, well, the funny thing about that too is that, so, one of the recurring things has been, you know, that Damian so desperately wants to be the heir to the Batman, right?
Yes.
He is convinced that he'll be the next Batman, and everybody's always like, no, that's going to be Dick. So, I think it'd be so funny if it's like, you've been chasing after this, and it's not even yours.
And cause the funny thing is, when he confronted Dick about it, he was like, dude, I don't care. Like, I've been Batman once, I'm good. Like, if you want it, I don't care, take it. I think it's more of a matter of if, like, Batman died now, who would get the mantle? Would probably be, you know, the adult, well, that's relative, Dick Grayson versus 13-year-old Damian, obviously. Because
right.
I think people might notice if suddenly Batman became a 13-year-old kid. They might be like, wait.
Right, wait, what?
Hold on a second.
Didn't Bruce have a 13-year-old kid?
Yeah, and Bruce is dead, too. What a weird coincidence. Yeah.
How strange. You know what? God, I'm going to give credit to this series, but one of the things that I always loved was when they killed Batman or Superman, when they killed Superman and they brought him back to life, they actually directly confront that particular issue, because obviously Clark goes missing at the same time that Superman dies.
Right.
And so because Doomsday and Superman had destroyed so much of the city, and there was just so much going on, they were having trouble, they were still finding people, mm-hmm. right? Supergirl could shapeshift. And so they had her shapeshift as Clark Kent. So there's this huge, dramatic, oh my god, we found Clark Kent with the help of Superman! So I was like, oh, at least you guys covered that. But I hate to give them too much credit. So, okay, so we've talked Batcat and Baternity, but I noticed that on your list this week, you have your favorite couple of all time, Rogue and Gambit.
Although I do have to say, with you saying that about Superman, see, now I'm wondering about the cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm.
About the same thing, you know, because Doomsday killed Superman in Batman versus Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Clark's gone. No one really seems to say anything about it. Like, what? I guess they figured, well, you know, Doomsday probably killed a lot of people, so all right, that makes sense. Maybe Clark was got a little too close to the story. Although, actually, if anyone's going to die being too close to the story, it's going to be Lois Lane. Come on, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess he's brushed that off. But now that he's back, how he's not going to be able to get his job back, because that's going to be weird.
Right.
I'm probably like, really overthinking that.
Well, no, I mean, what do you say? Like, oh, family emergency that took me away for 6 months.
Yeah, but his mom had lunch with Lois at the office many times. They all saw her there.
Right, exactly. I mean, you don't have a good excuse.
I don't know.
It's just, I don't think.
And the thing is, they're not going to address that at all. I don't think.
No, they won't.
All right. Well, so back to Rogue and Gambit. People who aren't dead, at least not this week.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it goes in Marvel. That's one thing I've been loving about these X-Men reboots with X-Men Gold. Especially in X-Men Gold. They constantly reference, you know, even Astonishing X-Men, Mystique was like, she's like, you know, when you join the X-Men, you're probably going to die and then you're going to come back. You know, they joke about this all the time. Like, you know, I used to be, like they said it, like the very first X-Men Gold issue, Nightcrawler's like, well, I'm supposed to be dead. Because they were like, Pyro, isn't he dead? And Nightcrawl's like, well, I'm supposed to be dead. And Peter says, I was dead. Logan says, I hear there's a me here that is dead. You know? So, yeah, at least they're kind of poking fun at that. But I don't know if Gambit and Rogue ever have died, but that's neither here nor there. So, Rogue and Gambit, they have their own series right now, and it's almost done. It's a 5-issue series. We just had issue 4. And it's been... It's funny because they've been sent on this mission to try to find out what's happening to all these mutant couples that are disappearing after visiting this spa resort that specializes in mutant couple therapy. And it's just kind of funny that Kitty's like, Rogue, you need to go and you need to take Gambit with you. She's like, why don't you and Peter go? And they're like, no, we're good. You two go. Just it'll be fine. And then they end up, you know, going through therapy. And... But then, of course, they start noticing that they're forgetting, like, there's lapses of time that are missing. But they don't care because they're just so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And their powers have diminished so they can really be together. So it's like everything is just, this is just wonderful. And they're really starting to work things out. But when they realize, wait, we're missing something. We're supposed to be here for a reason. This isn't right. This other couple we become really good friends with, they've been gone now for several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We need to investigate this. And so when they do, and like I said, their powers are almost pretty much gone. So they're very weak. You know, they're pretty much like normal humans at this point. And they go to, you know, confront it. And instead they are confronted with all of their past versions of themselves. Like they've been making like dolls of them. Because at one point, like Rogue's like, she goes up to this one outfit that I clearly remember from the early 90s, where she's wearing like these Daisy Duke jean shorts, this little like picnic style top that's like halter top, because it, you know, one of those from the 90s where you tied it around the boobs in the middle, you know, and and flip-flops. And she's like, she goes, what was I thinking about this? And Gamma's like, well, I know what I was thinking. You know, just, yeah. So, and they're, you know, because you see all their different outfits that they've ever worn. And of course, then these dolls come to life and start beating the crap out of them. And it's funny because then they're talking about how this is therapy, about how they're like, she's like, I'm taking on the Gambits. He's like, that's cool. I got you. And they're, so they slowly defeat all these dolls, and they realize that doing all of that really, they started to explain, it was their own therapy, their own way of dealing with it, so they could start talking. Well, in this issue, they start to realize that the reason why everything's been so fine with them is because there's this mutant there who has been absorbing their all these mutant couples, their fears, and then slowly their love. And basically, and then they become like mannequins, like soulless things. And then when she needs certain one of their powers, she absorbs them completely, and then they die. And so what she'd been doing, she'd been absorbing Rogue and Gambit's fear and sadness. So they were able to get over their problems because they no longer had the what ifs and you did this and you did that and we didn't talk about this. But, you know, if you think about it, if we all could do that, we'd all be getting along so much better. Someone suddenly took away like all our memories of our baggage. But in the process, they interrupt this mutant trying to absorb their powers in front of them because they destroyed like all their little dolls. And so they send more of them after them, but this time it's different because she had tried to absorb their powers at this point along with it and put it into these dolls. And so now when Gambit punched through Rogue, like a Rogue doll straight through her, and a piece of Rogue, because like I said, she absorbed pieces of them, a piece of Rogue went into him. So suddenly he's having a memory that she's had, so it's from her point of view, and it's from Scott and Jean's wedding. Because I don't know if anybody remembers, but Scott and Jean's wedding, Rogue caught the bouquet, and he caught the garter. So this is like, this is a little side scene that the two of them go off and do that they didn't have in the wedding issue. It's all told from her point of view, and it's all like, you know, what have you done? How did you fall in love with, you know, the most handsome snake in the grass? You shouldn't trust him. There'd be nothing about it. You know, one day he might just leave you, and somehow he doesn't. And he just sits there like his mouth open, and he's crying watching this. And then so she's about to punch through one of him, and he's like, no, don't. And she does. And the moment that she sees is one where she was trying to get him to join the Avengers, but then she told everybody, no, I really can't trust him. You can't trust him to do the right thing all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, and it was that time when he was confronting her about that. And so she finally gets to see how much that really hurt him. Because he's like, love has never been the problem. I will never stop loving her. I still love her now, but she doesn't trust me. Then I don't see a point in continuing to fight for us to be together, no matter how much I love her. Mm-hmm. And of course now Rogue is crying, and then they realize that, oh my gosh, this is what we are seeing. And they're like, well, we can't punch our opposites because now we're just going to get those memories back. Not only that, but they're getting each other's powers. So Gambit, he's like, I like having this much strength. And flying around, and she's like, this is fun blowing stuff up. but then they really get to talk at that point. You're like, okay, so now we understand, because they loved one another, but it was at that moment that they got that both of them really did. They were just scared. Mm-hmm. And so all the doubts about how they felt about one another went away because he learned that she never stopped loving him and was always going to love him. And she learned the same thing about him. He's like, it's always you. And she thought the same thing about him. But, you know, it's hard when, you know, suddenly she's sleeping with Magneto and Magneto. That doesn't make any sense. That's just gross. He's like 30 years older than her. Nasty. No. Mm-hmm. And that's not even the first time that they, you know, hooked up either. You know, and he's just like, well, fine, you know, if she, whatever. So he just goes and sleeps with everything that, you know, comes his way, because why not? But his whole thing with that is, but I never loved any of them. And you know, she didn't know if she loved Magneto or not, but she still saw Gambit as like her closest and best friend, someone that she could always go to. And no matter what happened, every time they got, you know, kidnapped, even like the most recent X-Men when they weren't together at all, but every time they got, you know, their minds were kidnapped and they were placed in these worlds that they had no idea who they were, they always gravitated together. And mm-hmm. I think this series was like, yes, they've always gravitated together. And it's not just because of fan base, because yes, the fans love it. I think the fans would be ultimately sad if they broke them up forever. But it's also like, no, they're supposed to be together. You know, kind of like with Batman and Catwoman. They always gravitate to each other because they're supposed to be together. And what I'm hoping is that this series, when it's over, I'm hoping this is going to be a canon series. And that what happens here, when they go through this really strange method of couple therapy, that they're together. And I don't know for how long that will be. Because comics.
Right.
But.
Well. So that's one of the things that is a constant irritation to me. And it's one of the reasons that I struggle with long running television shows too.
Yeah.
Where it takes them forever to finally get the couple together. And then when they get them together, they're immediately like, well, this is boring. Let's break them up now.
Right. Let's cause instant strife.
Right. And I hate that. In comics, I feel like are the worst about it too.
Mm-hmm.
And just, oh my God, just give me my Catman. My Batwoman. No, that doesn't work. Catman's going to have to go, huh? My Batcat. Give me my Batcat where they're happily and they're just, I mean, yeah, they can deal with a bunch of bullshit and external forces. They live in Gotham City. It's already dramatic. You don't need them to be dramatic.
Right. And, you know, one thing I can say is that, you know, I don't read Green Arrow anymore, but with, you know, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, Ollie and Dinah are still very much together. And talk about a couple, you know, that hasn't really deviated at all.
Right.
But they can still find ways to, you know, for it to be interesting and not have all this drama. You know,
well, again, they're superheroes. They already have lots of drama.
You'd think. I mean, this is...
Right?
This
especially isn't like... Rogue and Gambit. They're X-Men. There's lots of drama.
There's always some drama.
God, they don't need... Yeah, they don't need people to tack on more shit. Like, yeah. Oh, and now they're going to start fighting because they're fighting.
You know, speaking of weddings, so Kitty and Peter are engaged.
Oh, I thought they... Didn't they, like, get married, and then they got, broke up, and then...
Fuck if I know. One of the great things I'll say about the Mockingbird series, and if none of you guys have read the Mockingbird series, go get it, all right? It's eight issues, I think, maybe 12. Doesn't take very long. But within those issues, they actually have a mock-up that makes fun of Kitty and Peter's relationship. Like, from the time that they meet to, like, the present at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where it's like, you know, oh, Kitty, like, oh, wait, she's, like, attached, it's like, she's phased through this rocket and is going to the moon, and she comes back down, and he's like, well, let's get together. She's like, well, actually, I'm pregnant. Well, whose is it? I don't know, maybe it's Kurt's, I don't know. And it's kind of just, like, like, you know, just back and forth, like, how they try to be together, but every time they... do something happens. And I thought it was just a great illustration, really, of how Marvel handles all that.
Right. Oh man, that's funny.
There's so many reasons why Mockingbird's such a great series. And that was just...
You really, really loved it.
Oh my god. You gotta have a sense of humor while reading it. That's all I can say. If you don't have a sense of humor, if you don't like some slightly silly, if you think that the whole idea of, Corgi Mermaids is stupid, then don't pick it up. Because
I'm just nuts about corgi butts.
Okay,
I have to tell you.
That was the best t-shirt.
Every time I see a corgi now, so to make it clear, this is a very frequent occurrence because we have a couple of neighbors who have corgis. And every time I see them walking and I see them like shaking their little booties as they walk around, I'm just like, I'm just nuts about corgi butts. And it makes me laugh.
You know... That was probably the best t-shirt Hunter has ever worn. And it's just so amazing. It's just so nonchalant about it on this cruise, you know, for two different reasons. And she's like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm here for the Corgi convention. And he's wearing this shirt. He's like, aren't you?
I'm just nuts about Corgi, but I love it so much. Gotta love it. And then, so, let's see. I only had one issue to talk about. So you also, I mean, I think you were all DC all the time this, I was about to say sprint.
Well, it's mainly, it's mainly because, like, I'm really behind on most of my Marvel stuff. Like, I haven't read the last issue of X-Men Gold, Blue, or Red, so I'm missing the rainbow there. I haven't read the most recent issues of Astonishing X-Men, and mainly what this is because with what's going on in Deathstroke, when it came up with Rose figuring out that she's the one who killed Etienne, mm-hmm. I actually went back and reread that entire arc. Because that's mm-hmm. how Deathstroke do. Because it's so Pulp Fiction.
Right.
And it's not like the movie Pulp Fiction where that's just, you know, 2.5 hours and I can follow that. But you're talking about several months and, like, you know, a couple of weeks in between your 30-minute, you know, series. It gets confusing after a while. So I had to kind of reread it and backtrace and see how all these pieces fit together. And as a result, mm-hmm. I kind of neglected so many other things. But today I finally caught up on... I could talk about The Flash, but I really don't want to because I don't know what to say about it.
Oh, well, that's not good. But you have Titans.
It's
Titans,
just like, Titans, well, Titans. I mean, like, I had to ask Larry, he's like, who's Avery? And he's like, oh, that's the Chinese Flash. I'm like, where'd she come from? He's like, oh, from that speed storm, like, you know, 25 issues ago. Oh, okay. I guess I totally forgot. So, as far as I knew, Godspeed killed everybody. So I guess there was one person besides Kid Flash that escaped that. And I guess she went to China. Mm-hmm. Why not? There's a Chinese Superman. Why not make a Chinese Flash? Sure. So Larry called it the super arms race.
I just adore Larry sometimes.
Well, I mean, it seems like if we get a Chinese Batman, then I know it's on. That's, or even a Chinese Green Lantern. Man, that'd be crazy. but basically, the story arc dealing with Grodd has come to an end, and at least it ended happily. With, you know, Barry did get his powers back, and he realized that he needs the Flash family. I'm like, oh, great. Now we got the Flash family back, I guess. You know, so the Bat family. And then he and Iris seem to make up. But then you flash into the 25th century where all the shit always goes down. And there's Hunter Zolomon there going, but it doesn't end peacefully for you, does it, Flash? I'm like, oh, God, really? Like, can we, like, stop with the future stuff, like, for a minute? Because for whatever reason, like, you guys have decided, because Iris killed Reverse Flash in the 25th century, even though apparently you can't kill this guy. What this, you know, 25th century, like, time force has decided that they're going to pursue this and go get Iris back in her time and bring her to justice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so if she killed him then, and then they went back, doesn't that mean things change? And how would you guys fucking know?
Oh my goodness, how do you even keep track of this?
This is why I hate time travel, because all it does is create paradoxes. And for whatever reason, people don't seem to realize this. That if you're going to do something in the future, and then you go back into the past, and therefore, because you see the future, you alter what you're going to do, that future's not going to be there. And no one seems to get it. And, like, the only movies that seem to get it was Back to the Future. That, because they talk about it constantly. You know, if you go back, you're going to change this. Now, they did do their own paradox in the second movie, but gotta, I don't know. Anyway, but no one seems to realize this, and it drives me crazy in comics. It's like, you just can't say the 25th century just freezes in this time, and that they're like, oh, nothing changes here, and we got this device that can track, you know, the tachyon particles that shows that Iris was here from the past and she's the one who killed him. Doesn't matter that Eobarthon was a terrible person and we're out to kill him, but, you know, she shouldn't have done it, so we need to bring her in for justice. Oh my God, why? Just...
I have no idea. Like, I heard all of the things, but I have no idea what you just said.
I barely do myself. Larry might, and that's a big might. Just because he reads The Flash. Because he and I were trying to decide, like, why does the 25th century, why have they made themselves god of the timeline? Like, why do they get to decide what, you know, what happens? You know, what goes on in the future, what goes on in the past? They can bring people back. And you find out it's actually being run by Hunter Zolomon, who, like, killed the original guy who was in charge of it. I don't. It hurts. It all just hurts. And I just, like, I just wanted to be happy that this whole thing with Grodd was over and Flash got his powers back and people are no longer crazy and he and Iris are back together. And that's just so cute. Can we just, like, please hug? Because they've been apart since she killed Eobard Thawne. Like, let's just have some happiness just for a minute.
Right. Or just some calmness, for goodness sake.
See, it's just like what you said, like, they're superheroes. There's enough drama. Stop breaking Barry and Iris up.
It's like their favorite well to go back to. Which I guess, like, makes me feel like it's always really lazy writing. Because I'm just like, oh, you've gone back to this old watering hole. Gotcha.
Oh, it's the same thing of them breaking up.
Yeah, like, oh, we don't really know what to do right now, so Barry and Iris are going to break up again. Oh, okay, fucking great. Like, and not just them. I mean, the X-Men did it for a long time, mm-hmm. too, right? Where they would just be like, so Rogue is really pissed about this thing.
I'm convinced that the X-Men in the 90s, not the Uncanny X-Men, well, it doesn't matter. That they were like, okay, so Rogue and Gambit are together. They've been together now for about 30 issues, and maybe that's a little boring. Maybe we're bored. So we're going to have her ask Sabretooth about this moment in Gambit's past that was probably about 20 fucking years ago, and she's going to get upset about it.
Right. Which is always one of my really, really... Ugh, I hated that shit.
Oh, like, what? Actually, that's probably one of my last issues I have, is when that all went down. And I was like, and I kind of stopped collecting. I thought, well, that, and I went off to college and I didn't have any money. But that's, like, one of the last, like, physical copies of X-Men that I own is that one. So I was like, really? Really did this? Like, I don't understand why she's upset. That was how many years ago? Not like he cheated on her.
Because reasons?
I guess.
I really do think, I stand by my assessment that they just get bored and they're like, this is easy. Just, instant drama, just add water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just gonna fight and break up because of this really random thing. Okay, sure.
It's like when they tried it for the longest time, you know, with Scott and Jean. We're gonna have Jean die on the moon. Let's bring on a clone. Oh wait, this clone is like super evil. Let's bring Jean back. Kill Jean again. Now Scott's dead. Jean's back, but not him.
I mean, yep. You know, I support killing Jean, but that's about as far as I go.
Kill her over and over and over again.
Yeah, you know, you do what you gotta do, man. And then you also have Titans, which it sounds like is also batshit right now.
Okay, well, everything is batshit. And because the Titans, you know, Batman's grounded them and he sent them to their rooms.
I fucking love that.
I can't believe they actually all did it. Well, Donna Troy is being held not captive. I'm doing air quotes, people. She's not captive in the Watchtower. She's not allowed to go anywhere, not allowed to do anything. They don't like the fact that Roy Harper calls her every now and then. No one wants to talk to her. But they're like, oh, no, we just need to, you know, analyze her for her own safety. But she's totally not a captive here. Uh-huh. Okay.
And,
totally. Right. And so Roy, in the meantime, he just can't sit idle. So he's been doing his own investigation into all these bad things that are going on and leads them all back to this synthetic drug that's being dispersed. And, of course, Donna's worried about him because, you know, Roy, he's had drug and alcohol issues in the past, and he's like, no, this is why I'm doing this, is to stop people from you know, becoming like that. And then this other catastrophes go on that turns out is Brain and Mala. I always love them together because they just crack me up. Brain and Mala are doing stuff, and They're just doing stuff. Well, they're
stuff.
Well, they're doing all these natural catastrophes that are, they're making unnatural catastrophes like constant tornadoes and earthquakes and things like that. So Batman's like, well, we can't figure out. So, you know, we need to get these people there, you know, help these people. And Donna's like, well, what can I do? And he's like, you can't go anywhere. You stay here. And Donna is like, she's like, yeah, but what about Roy? He's doing this. And Batman's like, Batman said, well, you know, Roy got himself into that. He can get himself out because, you know, Batman's the caring guy that he is.
Well, yeah, he's always very sympathetic.
And so Donna takes a moment of weakness when Batman's distracted by Brain and Mala, and she escapes. Like, he's like, you gotta come back here. And she's basically like, make me. And leaves. And she saves Roy from really getting beaten to death. Because he was very close to it. He just got overrun and, you know, he doesn't have superpowers. And so she came in there and saved him. And apparently the next issue is going to be the wrap-up of that. But I don't know if the Titans are going to continue because, as far as I know, Batman still has them grounded. And I don't even understand why, except that, you know, thanks to those, the solicits that they got posted, it sounds like they're going to come up with, they're going to pull an X-Men and have like four different teams of Justice League, and some of the Titans and Teen Titans are going to be mixed in with those.
Right.
Which, okay.
Well, it sounds like, I don't know, a lot of times I find with comics, they get to this point, and this happens a lot with long-running series, right, where all of a sudden they're like, we just need to stop doing what we're doing, or we need to break up, or we just need to call it quits. And they get into this weird limbo, and I generally think, I am convinced that either creative talent leaves and they're in a shuffle to find new talent, right? So they're like, all right, let's just put this on ice until we can find someone else. Or they're in talks for, yeah, should we cancel this series? Because it happens too frequently and it happens too frequently and on regular intervals in a lot of these long-running series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced it's like the comic equivalent of Sweeps Week.
Could be. It really, you know, could be. And the thing is, like, Titans was always so great. Like, it had a really, you know, with these guys together, it was really a lot of fun. Maybe they got bored because Dan Abnett decided to make a lot of it, you know, romantic, which I personally liked.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's, you know, my girl showing. You know, I thought it was so cute that Garth and Lilith got together. And I find it adorable that Roy was, like, pining for Donna but didn't know how to tell her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Nightwing's just like, I'm cooler than all of you. And poor, you know, Red Wally's like, I really love Linda Park, but I scare her because I keep saying that we need to be together. And she's like, I don't even know you. You know, and I gotta think of that. He has like a heart thing now, thanks to Damian. And he's not supposed to be running anymore, and yet he's saving the world with the Flash right now. I swear to God, these people don't know what they're writing.
Like, they don't, I really don't think they do.
They don't talk to one another, and if I needed any other proof, it's the various colors of X-Men, because my God. Like, I don't understand how these characters can be all these different teams at once, and how Nightcrawler can be like in the negative zone, and yet on Jean's new team.
Well, I mean, a lot of them do run into, or I think a lot of them, a lot of these things, they prey on the alternate universes and timelines, right?
Which is what I hate.
Well, don't we all? I hate
it so much. I mean, if they want to say that, oh, well, you know, that happened at a separate time, but still the same universe, okay, that's fine, but you guys got to get this stuff synced up eventually, because it just does not making much sense.
Yeah, it's all over the fucking place,
like,
now.
Like, you can do that with, like, the Avengers and stuff, because all those have their own comics anyway, and, you know, they can come together with the Avengers, and then they can split apart. And the same thing with the Justice League. You know, The Flash says he has his adventures with the Justice League and he has his own thing. It's okay that the times don't line up because that's what it is. You can't really do that with the X-Men.
No, not really. But they try it anyways.
Well, obviously.
You know, I mean, you gotta try something, right?
So I don't know what's going on. I don't know if Dan Abnett's leaving. I hope he's not, because I really enjoy him writing this. But like I said, there was some romance. It was funny. There were so many funny lines in this. He really was able to bring in some really good stories. bringing in some of the older Titans and try to piece together how the timeline is all fitting in and not fitting in with Rebirth. And maybe it's because they said maybe this Rebirth thing isn't happening the way that they want. They're trying to axe that and start new. And again, we've said this probably every single episode of we're convinced that DC is just throwing shit at walls to see what sticks.
Let's just see what works.
Right now it is, let's have Bruce and Selina get married. People will like that, right?
Oh my god, yes.
Well, obviously.
I'm not even ashamed.
No, it's just, you know, honestly, of all the couples that I would have imagined you having a soft spot for, they were not anywhere close to the top of the list.
Oh god, yes. I don't know why, but I do know why. That issue that I read when I was very, very young, and for some reason, and I loved it. It was such a fun issue. I mean, it remains probably one of my top 20 issues of all time, because I just love it so much. And I don't even think, I would have to go back and try and figure out which freaking issue it was and what series. But I've never gone back and reread it. I don't know if I would still like it. But it just cemented them as a couple in my head. I was, okay, they're the couple. So I always looked at Talia as the interloper. Even though, I mean, technically now seeing that they got married in 87, probably Selena was the interloper. But I've always, because I just have such an affinity for Selena, I just look at Talia as like, excuse me, honey, you need to get out of here.
I do find Selena funny. I really enjoy it when she visits Batgirl and the Birds of Prey.
Really, I've always liked her character.
Because she's funny. She's so funny. And she's one of those, like, I would just say, I guess she's a villain, but not at the same time.
I'm hoping that Tom King does the Catwoman series, too. Because the Swamp Thing Winter Special was a little strange. We talked about that.
Yes.
Tom King, but he did Sheriff of Babylon, and that was some of the finest drama I've read in a really long time. That's one of those series that when people are like, oh, what's something I should read? And I'm like, the Sheriff of Babylon. I just love it so much. I'm hoping that he does Catwoman, because this issue was really good and I really liked it, and he just handled it so nicely. Please give me some Catwoman.
Man, Tom King, he's been writing Batman now for a while.
Yeah, he has been.
So, okay, I'm trying to look this up. I'm
hoping that it's him doing it.
No.
What?
It's not him.
What's not him?
Catwoman series.
Oh, the new one isn't going to be him?
No. It's Joelle Jones.
Oh, fuck yes!
Okay.
Oh my god! Oh god! Oh my god! So,
ladies and gentlemen, I think we just heard her sploosh.
Yes, I just slid off the couch. Oh my god, I love Joelle Jones. So Joelle Jones wrote this fantastic series that I absolutely adore, and I recommend to friends and family. It's called Lady Killer. It's published by Dark Horse Comics, and it is a phenomenal series. There's series one and series two of it. And they're each 5-issue arcs. And it stars, the main character is a woman named Josie, I think it's Schuller. Schuller is the last name. Josie Schuller, and it's in the 60s. And she is the perfect 60s housewife. She wears the crinoline dresses and hosts Tupperware and Avon parties, and she has a handsome sales husband, and she cooks all these fabulous
meals. Wait a second.
And she's a serial killer.
I think I remember you talking about this.
Well, she's not a serial killer. Yes, I did, because I was totally over the moon with this. She's not a serial killer. She's actually a contract killer.
I was gonna say, I think she's an assassin, right?
She's an assassin, and it's fantastic, because she manages to balance all of the perfect 60s kitsch So again, the big crinoline dresses and the gloves and the pillbox hats, and then she is literally stabbing someone to death with her high heel shoe.
So like, imagine Donna Reed as a mercenary.
Exactly.
Which is actually delightful to think about in so many ways.
Oh, it is. It's so fantastic. And it is really, it's just a fantastic series. And she has, I love Joelle Jones' art style. Actually, you know what? She did all of the covers for Mockingbird. And she didn't do the inside art. She just did the cover art.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's an issue of Mockingbird where it's Mockingbird and, what's his name?
You know, oh, what's his nut?
Yeah, they're both wearing, like, wetsuits.
Okay, it's her and Hawkeye, because I've just pulled it up.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Good God, I could not think of his name.
You know, her ex-husband.
Yeah, you know, that guy. That is actually very close to her style in Lady Killer, because I just remember Mockingbird, like, she has on the scuba, the mask is up on top of her head, and it kind of looks like a pillbox hat.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when you were reading it, I had pulled it up. It's like the third or fifth issue, I think, or maybe it's the sixth.
Fourth.
I would get there eventually. but I remember looking at it, and I was like, oh, my God, that's Joelle Jones. I just love her series. That makes me so happy.
She did, I'm looking to see which cover she did. So she did my favorite cover, which is the issue number 3. And it's basically, it's just Mockingbird, lying on the ground and just her hair. We talked about this. I have a thing with hair. It's just her blonde hair just everywhere. I just love it.
Now I have to look this up and see. But, yes, I love her style. And Lady Killer is another one of those series that I recommend to everyone. It's one of those books that I really like. One of the things that I really love in comics is, you know, sometimes you read a comic book and you're like, this could have been a novel, I didn't really need the visuals. Whereas other times you read comics and they really, really put to use those visuals, that where it's like it's telling two stories, right? Almost. Mm-hmm. East of West is very much like that, and so is Hickman's other story that I'm head over heels with, Black Monday Murders.
Yeah,
remember I sent you that panel where the guy's beating his brains out, meanwhile the other guy is just like having a normal conversation. And Lady Killer is like that, where she's having this like, oh, I'm a contract killer, and she's having very serious assassin-y dialogue, and yet again, it's set to a Tupperware party, and there's clearly plastic on the couches. And
that's amazing.
It is so amazing. I just love it. Oh God, I'm so excited. And but focusing, I only actually have one series to talk about, because Batcat, obviously I read Batcat. It's the only issue of Batman I've read. Thank God it didn't reference anything else, otherwise I would have been like, help. But the only comic that I've had in the past 2 weeks is Gideon Falls, which I am still very much liking. I picked it up, and I have to say that when I picked it up, I was a little skeptical about it. Because it's written by, what's his name? It'll come to me in a second. But it's written by Jeff Lemire, who I absolutely love, but then also Andrea Sorrentino, who was behind Old Man Logan and Green Arrow.
Okay.
So, I love Jeff Lemire, though. He's quickly becoming one of my big favorites, right?
Because he's amazing.
And Cliff Chang is doing some of the artwork, which I really like, but it's mostly Sorrentino. I was a little skeptical about it, but, so I've decided, so last year, and the year before that, was demons, 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 demons. This year, I feel like the stuff that I'm gravitating toward is the stuff that's more of a critique of tropes. So, like, Kill or Be Killed. I know I've talked about how that's a critique of the vigilante. Mm-hmm. Or actually, it's more of a deconstruction of the vigilante trope. Gideon Falls, I am loving this so far. It has all of these elements. It has the elements of Twin Peaks that I always really loved.
Okay.
It stars two characters who are slowly but surely realizing that there is something called a black barn, which is like this alternate dimension on Earth where it's just like an evil. It's kind of like the warp from Warhammer, which if you know me, huge Warhammer 40K fan. I love the concept of the warp. That's kind of what this is. But they have these two characters who are coming at it from different angles. And the one character who's coming at it has... he has some problems.
That's a nice way of putting it.
He's a legit conspiracy theorist. And not like... a lot of times, like with the vigilantes, right? We see the people who are just like, I'm going to go start taking the law into my own hands. And everything goes great. And, you know, nobody asks uncomfortable questions. And they don't show that for you to actually be a vigilante, you would probably have a few screws loose, right?
Right.
This guy...
well, wasn't that the point of the Watchmen?
Exactly, yes, like Rorschach. In Gideon Falls, you have a character who's paranoid, but it's not like in that funny, cutesy paranoid way. He's actually paranoid. But, now granted... he's a conspiracy theorist who believes there's an alternate dimension, and there totally is an alternate dimension, so he's absolutely correct.
Okay.
But they're showing you kind of what type of person it would take to uncover this. It's only the second issue, so it's still kind of hard to comment on it, other than I really like where it's going. It's very Jeff Lemire. I'm really intrigued by it, so I am not regretting my time spent with this one so far.
Well, I mean, you said it's Jeff Lemire. I mean, I can't imagine regretting anything.
Right, pretty much. He's just, he's pretty flawless. So, that's what I've got so far, and now I have something to be excited about, because Joelle Jones is going to do... oh, I'm so excited.
I do have to retract an earlier statement.
Oh, no.
So, I was saying that that was Mockingbird that had all these mock comics kind of making fun of the X-Men and stuff with Kitty and Peter. It was not Mockingbird, because I was just flipping through. She's like, hey, where was that? I got to find out where that was, because I did take screenshots of these because they were just too funny not to, but I have no idea where they were.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know. Fuck, I'll figure it out. That's frustrating, because they were so funny, but either way, like, I might just share the pages on the website, because everyone needs to read these, especially if you are a former X-Men fan. All right, with that, I guess we should just go ahead and wrap this baby up.
Let's wrap this bad boy up.
All right, so no more on the Bat, Cat, and Paternity this time, but we might have it next time, so same time, same Bat channel.
Okay, I just said that so loud I freaked out one of my cats. Harley Quinn actually just got freaked, and now she's looking at me like, what is wrong with you?
That's what cats do, kind of.
Yeah, it kind of is.
But we do thank you for listening to us once again with all of our yellings and musings, especially about Bat, Cat, and Paternity. I swear,
it's
like,
so great.
It's either going to be great or it's going to be very disappointing.
Yeah, I'm really...
But let's try to be somewhat optimistic. I know that's hard.
Yes, for once.
That's hard in comics, but let's be optimistic.
Let's do less.
Like, I personally don't care about them as a couple, but for Jen's sake, let's hope it turns out well. And then for my sake, I want this Deathstroke thing to be fucking hilarious. That's really all I'm asking.
It just needs to be funny. That's right. All you need is some good humor, because let's be honest. I mean, just you and I just spitballing can think of some hilarious avenues for this to take.
I seriously want a Maury Povich show.
Oh my god. Or at least a cover. At least a Maury Povich cover.
Oh my god. I need to get on Twitter. I need to get this happening. Not that they haven't already turned in their cover for the next issue or anything, but you know. Alright, so anyway, we thank you so much. We will be back in 2 more weeks. My name is Carrie Honey. You can find me on Twitter at Crunchy Chocobo. And my lovely co-host is Jen Bozier. You can find her on Twitter at Jen Bozier. You can find the site at Yell About Comics on Twitter. We're also on Facebook at Yelling About Comics. Obviously, our website is yellingaboutcomics.com. You can find this podcast there. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. as well. Man, like, I've run over, like, I've talked too much today. I taught, like, 2 yoga classes. I don't think I can talk anymore. running out of things. So I'm just going to go ahead and just end it here and say good night and good luck.
Good night as well from me. I don't know how to sign off.
I keep telling you to say courage.
Courage!